It's 6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, Friday, January 7, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. And for those of you who have not gone out and signed up to get our email blasts, well, that's very easy to do. If you just, you can do it right there on thepowerhour.com. We make it very, very easy to shop there, and want to let you know about the Real Anthony Fauci book, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, The Global War on Democracy and Public Health by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We've interviewed him on this program, and we are happy to offer this book 10% off at the Power Mall. Get yours now, because I know our producers ordered a limited quantity. Don't be left out. This is a deep read. It's a wonderful book. I have a copy of it myself. But best buy it from the Power Mall, because that's what keeps us ticking. We have an interesting perspective on history, and that has to do with how God was used by our founding fathers to create the Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and what Americans have believed in ever since this country was founded. There is an organization out there called the Black Robe Regiment. It was founded by Reverend William Cook in September of 2012 as an association of clergy who aspire to the exemplary lives and fighting spirit of the bold and courageous ministers who garrisoned the pulpit of the American Revolution. And you have to also understand that William Cook has been plugged into the Clay Clark's Reawakening America tour. He spoke at the Dallas event. He's going to be speaking at the Canton event in February. And it's a pleasure to have Reverend William Cook on the Power Hour with us today. Good day to you, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Good day to you. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you today.
The website is blackroberegiment.us for those of you who want to check out. We're talking about securing the blessings of liberty. And the thing is, judging from what Greg Locke and other pastors that I have heard at the Reawakening America tour, and you were a speaker on stage too, he was, as you were, I'm sure, imploring with these pastors to get off their keisters and stop kowtowing to the government narrative and think for themselves and get in the fight. Is that right? Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, I'd say that's a very fair statement. And Greg is a friend. He was right. Absolutely right.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is I caught that one little bit where he said that people will remember John the Baptist, but they won't remember the name of the executioner, because John the Baptist is the one that stood up and spoke out for what was right. The executioner was just like fading in the background just because
right.
Somebody wanted his head in a charger. There is a sacrifice that obviously has to be made, and I caught that in Greg Locke, and that speech was so dynamic, it sent chills up my spine. So elaborate on what the Black Robe Regiment is,
sure.
What it's, where it came from, how it got started, and what it's doing now.
Well, first, let me just say one thing. I did not found the Black Robe Regiment. The Black Robe Regiment, actually, if you go back and you look at American history, you'll find that it was the British that came up with the term. They called the American clergy the Black Regiment. Many of them were they blamed people like Winthrop for his role in turning the clergy toward liberty. In fact, in one instance, a British parliamentarian said, "America, there's no use in bemoaning what's happening. America has run off with the Presbyterian parson." And the term Black Regiment was essentially coined by the British. It was a derogatory reference to the black robes they wore, the black Cambridge robes that they wore when they were preaching. And so it was kind of a slam on them. But it's an accurate slam, because the clergy were more responsible for what the British thought of as the rebellion, and we call the American Revolution for Independence. The clergy were more responsible for that than anyone else in the society, because they had preached the political thought or the political worldview in the founding charters for decades before the revolution even began. And when it really began as a result of their preaching. Many of the clergy, there are some profound instances, but many of the clergy, when Lexington took place, And that battle was led by a clergyman. But when the war started, many pastors shouldered their own muskets, called their flocks together, assembled, and called the men of their congregations to war. They said, I'm going. One pastor in New Jersey, Joab Houghton, he called his flock together, and he said, the British are murdering our brethren of New England. Who goes with me to Boston? And so he marched off with 50 men of his church to fight the British. And when Lexington occurred, one of the most prominent figures in that was Reverend Jonas Clark, who pastored the Church of Christ in Lexington. And Clark had been very involved in local government. He had actually written all the government, significant government papers for the region of Lexington and Concord. He was, in addition to being a pastor, he was also a statesman. And the night that Paul Revere rode into Lexington, one of the places he went was to the home or the parsonage of Jonas Clark, because there were two founding fathers, the two men we call the founding fathers, staying with Clark that night, Samuel Adams and John Hancock. Whenever they couldn't find safe haven in Boston, they would stay there with Clark. And they were there that night. And so Revere went to their home because the British had received orders not to return from confiscating the weapons and powder stores of the people of Lexington without those two founding fathers in stocks. And so when Revere got to the door and notified them that the British had these orders and were on their way to Lexington by land, one of the two men, Hancock or Clark, Samuel Adams turned to Clark and said, sir, will your people fight? And the pastor responded, I have prepared them for this very hour, because Clark had actually helped to train the militia in Lexington, the men we call the Minutemen, we affectionately refer to as the Minutemen in America today. But Clark had actually participated in their training. And he watched the entire battle unfold the next morning from his parsonage door. And when the battle was over and he went out to survey the damage, he found that 8 men of his flock were dead and 10 were wounded. They were all from his church. And so when that event took place, while that event was unfolding in Lexington and Concord, there were other pastors in the region who basically, like Minutemen, ran to the congregations throughout the region and said, the British are attacking us. You need to go out and fight them. And they went out and they actually participated in the battles to fight the British, particularly during their return to Boston. And so the colonists and their pastors were actually along the road, hiding along the road back to Boston, and they were shooting at the British. The British lost over 320 men that day, and Americans lost maybe, I guess, 92, so it wasn't just the people that died in Lexington. There were a lot of casualties, but that was what kicked off the war. And the American, when that news started to spread through the colonies, it created an outrage among the people of America and among the churches, and it was felt that the British had actually engaged in murder in Lexington and Concord. And so it was an outrage. And so many pastors during that era, many pastors shouldered their own muskets, called their flocks together, and led them to war against the British. Many pastors actually fought in the Revolution, led troops in the Revolution. Some of them paid the ultimate sacrifice. But they were really the pastors of that era were really the founding fathers. They were the true founding fathers of America. They were the inspirational founders, the ideological founders of America, because the principles that are in our founding charters came from the pulpits of America. They came from the pulpit. And, you know, it makes sense because, you know, the principles articulated in the founding, particularly in the Declaration of Independence, are clearly scriptural.
They certainly are. And that's one thing, you know, that most people, I think we sometimes are a little complacent when it comes to history and who sacrificed their values and their beliefs in for the sake of freedom. And now,
that's right.
Since then, we have the IRS and 501c3 regulations that basically say, hey, if you're going to be a nonprofit and you're going to be a church, well, you can't encourage block voting and speak against the government. Otherwise, we could take away your tax-exempt status. And so as a result of this, there has been an attack on the church to no end, and it's still continuing as far as I understand. You may have different information about that, Reverend Cook. What happened between then and now?
Well, the church has been the target of an influence operation for decades, and the influence operation. I don't know how Johnson succeeded, or the, you know, the government at that time succeeded in adding the Johnson Amendment to the IRS tax code of 1954. You know, it should have been an outrage because, again, anyone with an incidental knowledge of American history would know that people like Peter Muhlenberg, who was a pastor in Woodstock, Virginia, and who left his pulpit for the battlefield in very dramatic fashion, that he had fought in the Revolution. He ran for the first Congress, and he got elected, he became a member of the first Congress, and his brother Philip, who initially opposed Peter's decision to join the military, to leave the pulpit for the battlefield, he opposed him, but he came around at the end of the war, and he also ran for Congress, and he became the first Speaker of the House. So there were a number of clergy in the first Congress. So the idea that somehow in fashioning the Constitution, the founding fathers would have conceived of an idea as absurd as separation of church and state, at least the way it's construed today, it just would not have happened. It's absurd. It defies history. And so it would have been considered, actually, if the founding fathers had tried to do that, we would have had another revolution right on the heels of the first one. But they didn't, and Jefferson knew what the pastors had done. He knew what they had done throughout America, and so he would have never countenanced that idea. The Johnson Amendment is really an attempt to neutralize the impact of the church, because those who promoted it understood that the reason they couldn't get certain things done in America, certain liberal ideas, certain political agendas, is because the church had been a powerful force. And, you know, political sermons endured in America for roughly 250 years before that. So, and while they did, liberty was secure. Pastors, you know, the pulpits thundered with the notes of liberty. And you could say, and by the way, the idea that pulpits wouldn't endorse a candidate is absurd. Pastors preached political sermons. They preached election sermons. And in some cases, they actually endorsed candidates publicly. So the idea that pastors have no business speaking to what's going on in the political realm is just absurd. And it has no historical foundation, no basis in truth, and it needs to be defied. Because what a lot of people in the church don't realize today is maybe if the church just goes along to get along, that the people that are trying to destroy this country will go easy on us. And what they don't understand, if you understand anything about Marxism and communism, you know that that everything that's being done is simply to move obstacles out of the way to get to the church so it can be destroyed. So the ultimate goal is not just to neutralize the church, but it's to destroy and exterminate the church. That's what's happening right now. And this first phase is really designed to neutralize the church. But I can guarantee you, as this Marxist insurgency in our country continues, it's going to be a fatal blow to the church. And so it's time to stand up. We've got to stand up while we still have a voice, while we can still speak, and while we can still exercise our freedoms and our will as people.
Well, the one thing that I did notice, and this is something that, you know, there's only been like a handful of these climactic events that Clay Clark has put on, but every one of these events have virtually, starting with Tampa, been held in a church that has undergone persecution. Because I remember the time, and I was in Florida at the time, that they arrested the pastor for holding services during a COVID lockdown. And this is just the beginning, because now, with everything that we're starting to understand, not only is this an attack on the church, it's attack on humanity. In general, it's attack on our freedom. Everything that they've done as far as locking people down, not allowing them to preach. And this is the beauty of this is everyone at Clay Clark's events has been inside of a church. And it was amazing to going to the Elevate Life Church as we did to cover that event and watch people like yourself and Greg Locke up there speaking about pastors. You need to stop kowtowing to the government. You need to stand up and take back America.
And, yes,
and this is amazing. We are actually now seeing Clay Clark and his group with General Flynn go to the church and appeal to the very same things that America's Black Robe Regiment was principled in.
Yes, indeed, they are. And, I don't think it was the event before Dallas. It was in San Antonio. I was privileged to have General Flynn introduce me just before I went on stage, and it was kind of funny. I wasn't expecting that, but he had to go out and make a brief announcement, and he turned to me and he said, "Hey, I want you to come out with me." So I went out. I didn't know why I was going, but I went out with him, and then he introduced me and he gave me. It was very kind of him, but I was honored that he would do that. And then I spoke for about 15 or 20 minutes. It was well received. But, you know, the message is that, you know, just like it was when Peter Muhlenberg left his pulpit on January 1, 1776, Peter Muhlenberg, whose father founded the Lutheran Church in America and expected his son to do as he had done, he decided to leave the pulpit to go to war because he was a member of the Virginia House of Burgesses. And I guess he didn't get the memo about separation of church and state. And while he was in Richmond for the House of Burgesses event where Patrick Henry gave his liberty or death speech, at the end of his what really amounted to a powerful sermon, at the end of Henry's sermon, he motioned that the counties of Virginia be put into a state of defense, which would have insinuated forming militia in those counties. And it was Muhlenberg, the pastor, who raised his hand and seconded Henry's motion. And while he was in Richmond, George Washington asked him if he would accept a commission in the Continental Army as a colonel. Muhlenberg accepted, and when he came back to Woodstock a few months later, he entered the pulpit. It was January 21, 1776, and he preached a sermon out of the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, which most people know as the verses where the writer said, to everything there is a season, a time to every purpose under heaven, time to be born, a time to die, time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. And it goes on down, to verse 8. And in verse 8, it says, a time for war and a time for peace. And that's where Muhlenberg ended his sermon. And the account, the record says, in a voice that thundered, he said, in the language of Holy Writ, there's a time for all things, a time to preach and a time to fight. The time to fight has come. And he said, and the reason his voice thundered is because there was such alarm throughout the Shenandoah Valley, the Shenandoah region, that people came from all over to hear him. And so there were people standing out in the church cemetery of this little log church. And he had to say it so that they could hear him. And after he said that, he came down from the pulpit, and he ordered drums to begin beating for recruits at the rear of the church. And he called men to join the cause. And he ended up recruiting 300 that day and the ensuing couple of days, he ended up recruiting 300 men from the frontier. That was the frontier of America at the time, to form the 8th Virginia Regiment, which he then led off to war, 300 men, and he was a very capable military leader. He was promoted to brigadier general, one of Washington's best during the war. And at the end of the war, he was breveted to what's called breveted to major general, and he was actually at the surrender of Yorktown. If you go to the Capitol and you look at the painting of Washington accepting the surrender of Cornwallis, Muhlenberg is in the line of generals that are seated on horseback to Washington's left. And he's one of those generals, and he was an amazing leader. And when he came back at the end of the war, his flock begged him to continue being their pastor. And his response was, "Well, I can no longer build the house of God because I'm a bloody man." He kind of responded how David did to Solomon. with respecting the building of the temple in that time. And so he went on to serve in Congress. He served three terms in Congress, one in the U.S. Senate. And he didn't see that that conflicted with his call to the kingdom of God. He served in those roles, and he died on the day he was born at the age of 61. And I'm amazed that a man of his age could have gotten so many things done in such a short amount of time. He was 29 years old when he left the pulpit, and he died at 61.
Wow. That is amazing to have a grasp of history like this, Reverend Cook. And that's one of the reasons why I'm glad that you were able to come on the show here. Now, the Black Robe Regiment, yeah, I mean, it is. And just to know that, I mean, I've taken the walk through historic Boston and seen the historic trail and seen the Old North Church, seen the lanterns, seen Faneuil Hall and Paul Revere's house. And just to, you know, everything that you're saying is I'm getting these vivid pictures of liberty and how people fought and died and how we have become so complacent here and why it's necessary for the churches to rise up and help take back America. So the Black Robe Regiment now, with the time we have left, very quickly, what is the current platform? Where is your agenda headed with this?
Well, where our agenda is headed, I'm hoping to meet with some pastors in Arizona. I think we're going to have a gathering out there sometime during the conference. And, you know, what I would say, what we are attempting to do in America is to establish, not to control, but just to establish a Black Robe Regiment in every political jurisdiction in America, with pastors who will assert their own and the vital influence of their flocks in local government pursuant to securing the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. That's what we're advocating. And we're seeing regiments form in Michigan, in Western New York. I believe we already have one in Arizona. It's going on in several states are actually beginning to rise up. And so if I could give our contact information, people can subscribe by texting BLACK to 53445. That's BLACK to 53445. Or they can email me at rev@blackroberegiment.us. Or they can just go to our website, blackroberegiment.us, and they can find out more about us there.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you, Reverend Cook. And we're going to the break right now. We'll be back with more news and commentary after this.
From you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
There are 31 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Friday, January 7, 2022. Central Time. And if you are listening to the show at any other moment in history, well, you can't call in. But if you're listening right now to the sound of my voice, and I tell you, yes, this is the seventh day of January. It is a Friday and we are live, and you're 12:31 Central Time or any corresponding time zone that matches up with that. Our phone number is 844-769-2944. We just got off the phone with Reverend William Cook. His website is blackroberegiment.us. And what a historical perspective of how the church got involved in the framing of the Constitution and the founding of our country and the defense of it. That's amazing. And they are trying to do the same thing and basically reinvent what happened. History does indeed repeat itself, folks. Sadly, Marxism and communism keep trying to infiltrate America. There are people that do not want to see America as the greatest nation in the world. They don't want to see us wealthy. They want to destroy us by any means. They are literally looking at what's going on in Washington, D.C., with all the infighting and the bickering and the arguing. What an example our government is setting for us. This was supposed to originally be a republic, according to Ben Franklin, if we can keep it. And we say, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. They even want to take God. They've taken God out of the schools. And what's happened? The number of shooting deaths in schools went up. They take parents out of the home with single moms advocating the breakup of the family. Folks, this did not come by accident. This was by design. And it's by design by people that want to see you, me, and everyone else in America fail. And when you have people that we trust or are supposed to put our trust in, like police officers, falsify reports about things that are happening in their community, I can only scratch my head and wonder what went wrong. Where did we fail? And this is the thing. Ted Cruz can sit there and say, we're supposed to protect our police officers. Excuse me, I thought it was the other way around. I thought police officers were supposed to protect us. That's the reason they signed on to defend and protect our communities. That's why I have a hard time with why these people back in 2020 that were rioting and shooting police officers and injuring them by the dozens, why they weren't prosecuted. Why these governors and mayors of these blue state cities allowed this to happen and allowed these police officers to be shot to death and murdered by rioters and looters, all in the name of what they claim is a peaceful protest. Well, it's a political narrative. The Epoch Times is reporting that in Seattle, officers falsified a report of armed Proud Boys members heading toward the autonomous zone in the city in 2020. This according to a watchdog. The Seattle Police Department abandoned a precinct on June 8, 2020. An activist soon after established an armed protest zone in the area, known by some as CHOP, C-H-O-P. That same day, officers over the radio said armed members of the Proud Boys, a right-wing group that has clashed with members of the far-left Antifa network, were heading towards the area where the autonomous zone cropped up. quote, "We're going to be the one taking my group down around City Hall to monitor the group of Proud Boys gathering right now," one officer told dispatch. "Small group, some possible Proud Boys. It looks like a few of them might be open carry," another said. A third officer later said one of the group was carrying a gun. "The group is very boisterous tonight." Hearing from the Proud Boys group, they are not very happy with the response in the audience. "They may be looking for somewhere else for a confrontation," the first officer said. Now, all this diatribe, of course, if you have a police radio, you're listening to this, all of this misinformation that is coming up. Video footage from the scene showed at least some of the individuals were already armed, according to a journalist who was in the autonomous zone. The string of communications prompted many people to go get firearms, and the event transitioned from being peaceful to something entirely different, all because these cops got on their radios and started making up their own narrative. Wow. Interviewed by the Seattle Office Police Accountability, the officer credited with coming up with the effort said officers put forth misinformation because they knew they would be overheard. You see, that's why they have police radios. And people that are sitting there listening to this going, "Oh, my God, they're coming into our neighborhood. We need to arm ourselves." You see what happens? This is how things get out of hand. This is how the citizenry all of a sudden feels like they're being threatened. They grab their AR-15s, multiple 30-round clips, go out into the front yards, and wait for something to happen so they can retaliate, all based on misinformation. And you see, when you have attorneys like the McCloskeys in St. Louis that felt their lives were being threatened, and they show up on their front doorstep waving guns around at BLM protesters who had broken through the gates of their gated community, and now are being basically, their law licenses are probably going to be suspended. People say, "Hey, you know what? They should have known better. Shouldn't have done that." On the other hand, because that's St. Louis and you have a blue state city prosecutor, and I say this because Missouri traditionally is a red state, but the prosecuting attorney in St. Louis is anything but red. And, you know, we hate to even grasp the concept that divisiveness has occurred and we, the people, have been divvied up by red state, blue state, which is why I played on Dr. Seuss when I said one state, two state, red state, blue state. It is sad that we have to stoop to this and come to the level of divisiveness conjured up by those in D.C. that would have us at each other's throats. And when they see the weakness of Jim Jones in the White House, I'm talking about the guy with the mental acuity of a two-year-old at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and they see how easy it could be to take over America, we don't have to blow it up. All we have to do is just launch an EMP strike, which we talked about yesterday. And the gentleman from EMP Shield, Andrew Butchin, who was on the program, told you just to go to EMPShield.com and do the research. Just download all the stuff and read it. Don't buy anything. Just read what's on the website. I did that very thing when I was introduced to EMP Shield, and I was convinced, you know, this might actually work. This is a solution to a problem the government is ignoring. The government is out to spend your tax dollars protecting its own infrastructure, knowing, based on the reports, that if an EMP were to occur in America, 9 out of 10 people would be dead in a year. Tens of thousands would be dead just in the first week because of the fact with the electricity failing, electronic machines that are keeping them alive in the ICUs across America would fail. And the generators, because they're not protected with EMP protection devices, would fail. The whole hospital would fail. And what are we to do about it? What can we do about it? We would all be isolated individually in our own homes with no electricity, no running water if it depends on electricity to get there, and no preparations made for food. And this is why when I hear people slamming preppers for stockpiling food, long-term shelf storage, et cetera, et cetera. I think, you know, you people are really ignorant. You don't understand what we're up against. Our elected officials impaneled EMP commission after EMP commission. And in so doing, they ascertained it's not just Russia and China, it's Iran and North Korea. And North Korea has the capability to launch an EMP strike on America. And if they did it, we may not even have time to react and give North Korea a dose of their own medicine, because they would have disabled all of our systems. The United States government, frankly, if you want to talk about whether we're at war or not with our United States government, understand that there are certain individuals within the U.S. government that respect we the people and dutifully serve as they were elected to do. But there is a majority out there of politicians who serve in Congress and are part of deep state, which is an actual, it's not a conspiracy theory. Deep state, in fact, does exist. They're all bureaucrats that are on a mission to destroy our freedom. And nobody's doing anything about it. And that includes Congress. This is why I'm wearing my t-shirt today that says, never underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups, with a picture of the Capitol building. You understand from my libertarian thought process here that liberty is the most important thing in my life. Having the freedom to go and do what you need to do to survive is important. And if somebody comes along and they strip you of that freedom by launching an EMP attack on the United States of America, they don't need to nuke and destroy with radiation. They only need to launch something 275 miles up in the atmosphere, and it takes out all of America, contiguous 48 states, part of Canada, part of Mexico. And here's the thing. We are not prepared for that. Our government is not prepared for that. In fact, they disbanded the EMP Commission in 2018, leaving behind a trail of paperwork basically saying that our power grid is totally vulnerable and unprotected. So what must we the people do? We have to rise up, and we have more than just COVID to worry about. We have to ignore the Omicron variant and ignore the government's vaccine mandates, because when the government is doing something dangerous, it is equally dangerous to be right when the government is wrong. And based on what you heard Dr. Paul Alexander just say during the first hour of the show, and if you missed it, you can go on thepowerhour.com tomorrow and download, because we will make it available to you, the episode. This gentleman is one of those frontline that wants the data, folks. He's like me. He wants data. He wants to see the data. You cannot make informed consent without data. And for them to put stuff in this vaccine and not put it on the vaccine sheets, they're saying it's got nanotechnology in it, little hydras crawling around in it that take all this nanotechnology to your brain and various other places. And we don't have this verified. And why does Pfizer want all of this data withheld for 75 years, as Dr. Paul said? No. No, we want that 55,000 pages per month so that all of our frontline people can look at this stuff and evaluate the sinister behavior of Dr. Fauci and Birx and Francis Collins. All these people that are involved, it's a real problem when they lie because they're making money doing it. In America, I mean, do you have to be such sheeple that you're going to succumb to this? I think a lot of you, especially those listening to this broadcast, are awake and alert and understand what's going on. And I seriously sat down one day and I put together a document entitled Be Proactive. And I want to take the rest of this broadcast to go over what I put in that writing. As far as being proactive, here's what you can do. Because people want solutions, okay, I'll give you some. This is from a proactive standpoint instead of reactive. In other words, I hear gunfire. Maybe I should grab my gun. What? I have no bullets. Why didn't I buy ammunition? Think about that in your preparedness, because personal preparedness is your responsibility as an American in defense of your freedom. As far as proactive in education, attend a school board meeting. Evaluate the board's positions on CRT and curriculums involving gender identity. Go to the library in each school. Look at the books. See if there's any that promote pedophilia and transgenderism. Identify and research each currently serving school board member. If necessary, hire a PI to assist you in your research, especially if you find suspect issues with that particular school board member, especially in the way they vote on things. If you're in that board member's district, challenge that board member for his or her seat in the upcoming elections. Politics is dirty pool, as you know. You'll have to expose the board member's flaws and bad policies as part of your campaign, but remember, turnabout is fair play. If you've got skeletons in your closet, you best be prepared to defend them, because the other side is going to bring them up. But where there were state statutes that were violated because of that board member's policy-making actions, well, no one likes a lawbreaker. Also remember, if you live in a blue state city, Antifa has been threatening parents who have been speaking out against the public school's decision to carry books that contain sexual scenes. And additionally, the DOJ might pay you a visit as well. You know, remember how the FBI swatted a family in Colorado because the parents were activists who protested at their local school board meetings like they did in Loudoun County, Virginia? The next element is in government. Attend city council, commission, or county commission board of supervisors meetings. Evaluate the ordinances that most affect the community in a negative way. This is what got Flint, Michigan's city council in criminal trouble, because they ignored the fact that their water supply was being polluted with lead and other contaminants, and people were dying. They got away with this up to a point because the public was complacent and didn't react. So the whole idea is, before it happens, look at the voting records of each city council alderman or commissioner or county board member. Evaluate the ordinances they passed for constitutional authority. If you have to, if you suspect anything, get an attorney to look at the ordinance and see whether or not there's a constitutional challenge. You have to remember, if it's the mayor, like Lori Lightweight in Chicago, that's doing the dirty and acting with too much power, then you have to organize a grassroots campaign to oust that mayor by recall or run against him on your constitutional platform and not on politics. I encourage everybody to vote for the person, not the party line, because we see where that has happened. And you have to understand, President Trump offered federal police to Lori Lightfoot, and she said no. But now, in her hypocrisy, she summoned the Biden administration to bring in federal officers. Look what Gavin Newsom has done in California with his overreach. A much larger grassroots campaign would be needed to get rid of him in the next election, especially given what happened in the last one. The quickest way to uncovering corruption is to investigate conflicts of interest, which would constitute ethics violations. That's the quickest way to get a politician out of office. You check for contract awards involving your target. Check out the recipient of the contract to see if nepotism or any other conflict or business interest exists behind the scenes that they haven't disclosed. Non-disclosure is a very bad thing. A positive result would certainly call for an investigation, and use of the information could be used to run against that party in the upcoming election and even bring about criminal prosecution. Oh, my goodness. You say, wow, Dave, this is a lot to soak up. I don't think I could do all of that. Well, how about fundraising? That's the next be proactive element in my speech. There are people in your community that are so occupied with either running a business or already engaged in community support activities that they can only spare a dime by donating to a nonprofit grassroots campaign you set up, like the two moms in North Carolina that organized a nonprofit to help elect Christian right-wing, right-thinking politicians to office in North Carolina. Nonprofit organizations are great ways to generate a community involvement, especially if you can set up a community radio station. People like to volunteer. Volunteerism should be encouraged. This separates the men from the boys, so to speak, when it comes to stepping up to the plate. So much for the cliches. If you have an existing area nonprofit radio station, Get involved. Offer to host a program, even if it's weekly. Talk to your community leaders. Get them to come on the show. Promote your program to garner listenership because that makes you very important. Pretty soon you're going to get the attention of the party line, and they're going to want to input their 2 cents, and that's a great way to decipher what platform they're really running on. Use your show as an internet vehicle. Do podcasts simultaneous to the radio show. If you need a little inspiration, go watch the movie Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis. That'll get you excited. Use the podcast to raise money for your campaign. Set up a Give, Send, Go account to generate funds for your nonprofit startup. Then when it comes to litigation, here's another proactive stance. When you find evidence of government overreach, there's nothing better than a political action committee or nonprofit consumer advocacy group to launch a lawsuit against the offending parties. You got multiple avenues of setting up a war chest, and if GoFundMe doesn't work for you, Give, Send, Go will. You can retain a law firm to fight City Hall. Because why? Politicians understand lawsuits. Litigation points fingers at political targets that have done wrong. Otherwise, why file a lawsuit in the first place? There may be lots of grassroots supports and donations, especially if there's evidence of constitutional violations, such as forced vaccine mandates or mask wearing of school children who are least likely to get COVID and die from it. The very thing that happened in Orange County, Florida, where OperationFreedomOfChoice.org was founded as a nonprofit and garnered national support in just a short period of time because the Orange County mayor decided to mandate vaccines for EMTs, firefighters, and first responders. 45% of the force, or 600 workers, said no to the vax and took action. They filed a lawsuit. And after it was filed, the governor of Florida and the AG got involved. The mayor dropped his mandate order. You see, there's a lot of these blue state or blue city mayors that are power hungry, and they will stop at nothing to exert it, constitutional or otherwise. You know, like Rahm Emanuel said, never let a good crisis go to waste. Well, that works in reverse, too, and turnabout is fair play. Let's talk about the electoral processes. Given the circumstances surrounding the 2020 elections, some 85 million of you out there now feel disenfranchised. Your votes didn't count. Given the alleged chicanery that occurred in numerous polling places in swing states, no enforcement of the election laws appeared to be the case. This is where having a constitutional sheriff can make a difference. So what do? Like Richard Mack said, get to know your county sheriff and get him to make a difference, or get somebody to run against him and get him out of office. If he's not going to pay attention, he is the supreme law of the county. He can stop election fraud. You have that opportunity to encourage him. And you militia members out there, your southern border needs you help if you can spare a week or two. There are several sheriff's departments and militias that have volunteered to help, and all you got to do is get in touch with one of them. That's right. Get your concealed carry permit and learn gun safety, because the Constitution protects your Second Amendment right to bear arms. Given what happened to Rittenhouse in Wisconsin, it may become necessary to defend yourself from intruders, especially in the case of EMP. Many states have castle doctrines in place, as well as stand your ground laws. Learn what they are. If you're in a red state with constitutional carry, you're in a much safer place because gun rights are respected and self-defense of one's life, liberty, and property are preserved. And if you have to vote with your feet, like so many people do, many families realize these Marxist-style dictatorship factions are rearing their ugly heads in what are known as blue states, and they're taking actions to sell out and move. And if you make that commitment to relocate, make sure you cancel your voter registration in the place you left. We don't want anybody taking your voter registration and voting twice with it. You are committed to a Second Amendment fully functioning state? Then act like it. Leave your blue state mentality behind or stay where you are. You obviously put up with it. You voted these people in office. Then you deserve what you get. If you're going to be proactive, then you know what to do. And the most important thing, research. Research, research, research. Do not be lulled into a false sense of security and become complacent due to these lockdowns because of this alleged plandemic. Understand being shut up in your home may have brought on lingering side effects such as depression and anger and the willingness not to communicate. This is all by design to turn Americans against each other. We have to knock it off, folks. Stop drinking the Kool-Aid. do as much research into the Constitution. If you feel weak, the Constitution, the first 10 amendments are not that hard to understand. Look up your state's penal codes. Look up everything and do that much research into the jabs and what's causing so many injuries and deaths. Understand what the elitist plans are. Know thine enemy whilst thou art in the way with him. Study the World Economic Forum. Understand Agenda 21. Operate and understand how the leftists are clearly out of emotion and not out of reason. They have these Kool-Aid mindsets, and you don't have to succumb to them. Many of these people who took the jab, their days are numbered. There is a very great possibility these people will be dead in years. Their life has been shortened. And above all, if you know of anyone that has land that you can build a community land trust with, this is a great way to make money administratively by setting up a nonprofit to have a community land trust startup. And all you have to do is just email us here at support@thepowerhour.com, and I'd be happy to get whatever information you need to move forward and make a living, especially if you have been displaced from your job. That's how this works, folks. It's called being proactive. That's my little sermon for today. Stay righteous and in right believing, folks. We will be back on Monday. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
Who's standing on the mountains? Who is on the earth below? Who is bigger than the heavens? And the lover of my soul. Great to God, He's Yahweh. Great I am, He's Yahweh. The Lord of all, He's Yahweh. Zev Sharon, He's Yahweh. Righteous Son, He's Yahweh. The three in one, He's Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.